What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
Okay, so you know the saying, Vic, as things change, they remain the same. Well, after 1,392 games, I think, the Four Nations break, guess what? It's down to two. And it's the same two teams that will decide Lord Stanley. The Panthers and the Oilers. Forget about it's the Stanley Cup. It's the rematch. That's what it is. It's being known as that. It's being called that. It's different this time. Anyway, going to be fun. Game one coming up on Wednesday. Welcome to Pucks and Seven, brought to you by Rogue Sports Media. Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash, Emily Kaplan will join us. ESPN hockey reporter will dive into the series to come. Again, game one coming up Wednesday in Edmonton, and we'll go 77 seconds in with Emily as well. Some off-ice news we'll dive into. Just touch on that. And as Vic and I said too before we came on, there's going to be a bunch of stuff too in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks outside of the actual cup final itself. So we'll keep you abreast as best we can. Here we go. Let's get into right now part two, as you say, on the lineup, the rematch. I'm going to say this. I'm going to lead you into this way. Sometimes at the end of the season, you have the final two teams and you think, okay, are those the two, look, the best teams from each of the conferences after we've seen the first three rounds? Sometimes you're like, well, no, this to me, hands down, they're the two best teams left, the two best teams from game one, despite a couple of blips, I guess, in the three rounds, each of them. But they, to me, are the two best, and they're going to fight for the championship.
Matthew Tkachuk agrees with you. He said over and over again.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that guy.
Not to his face.
No.
he thinks, I mean, what else is he going to say? But still, he's made a point of saying it several times, that these are the two best teams. This is what he expected. I mean, now we've seen the clip over and over and over again of him in the handshake line with McDavid last year, said, see you here next year. And lo and behold, we are seeing them here next year, this year, now. I think it feels a little bit more special. I don't think the series would have felt quite as special if it was Dallas Panthers, which would have been great, or if it was Oilers Carolina, which still would have been great.
Agreed.
But this just has that little bit extra to it because of the revenge factor, of course, and also to see if the Panthers can make history and win a couple in a row. So I think it's a big one, man. And listen, Ryan, after losing the first two games to Los Angeles, the Oilers are 12-2. How can we say they're not the best team coming out of the West? We can't.
No, agreed. And the same thing you say about the Panthers. They had a couple of blips, right? They had different ones over the course of each series, but not many. So they're the best team coming out of the East.
Only Toronto gave them any trouble. The Lightning didn't give them any trouble. Carolina didn't give them any trouble. Only Toronto did.
Carolina wouldn't give anybody any trouble.
They weren't that
bad. Well, no, come on. I mean, really? Hey, Rod, you kind of got swept. I know you didn't, but you kind of did. Anyway, we can talk about that some other time. I want to say this, though. This cup final, and see if you agree or not. This feels different going into this one. Mm-hmm. And you hear the different quotes from the players, especially on the Edmonton side of things. McDavid said the other day after that final game against Dallas, he said something like, you know what? We're calm. We're not as up and down as we were last
more postseason even keel, run. Yes.
Yeah. And it just seems different. The Panthers, this is not only their second straight chance to get a cup because they won it last year, but this is the third straight season that they've been.
It's really incredible.
It's unreal. And I said this on the weekend. It's one thing to play for the Stanley Cup. It's one thing to get to the final two teams. It's another thing to do it twice and three times in a row. And I know, you know, Tampa's been doing it and Florida's been doing it. But it just seems to me this feels a bit different, especially on the Edmonton side of things. There's not this, you know, it's kind of down here. I know it'll get amped up in game one. That's fine. But something's different to me about this one.
Who were your X factors in this series? We know that the Panthers, whenever possible, are going to try and match the Barkov line against the McDavid line, because that's the matchup that the Panthers are going to prefer.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're not going to have that opportunity right off the hop because first game's in Edmonton. So there some adjustments will have to be made. That to me, that is battle numero uno to me, is how Alexander Barkov can not completely contain McDavid. Nobody can do that, but how he can restrict him as much as possible and how the speed on the Edmonton Oilers responds to the forecheck of the Panthers, because again, I think that's going to be where we really have loggerheads, so to speak.
This whole series as well, going into it, again, you've got your star players on each side. Mm-hmm. You have the goaltending. Yeah, the goaltending certainly would favor Bobrovsky historically, but Stuart Skinner lately has been great. But again, I think we joked about this. If he's not pitching a shutout, he's got an 800 save percentage.
He's getting lit up,
right? You never know what this guy's going to do. But the depth on each, this is extraordinary. The Panthers, they've had 21 players, 21 of them, recording at least 1 point. Edmonton has 19 of 21 recording at least 1 point. So going into it, whatever you want about the X factors, the McDavids, Evander Kane, certainly I think he'll have a great series. On the other side, the Barkov, Kachuk, Brad Marchand. I mean, he lives for this type of thing. The depth that has been used and has been shown to every single person watching these two teams.
It's been so effective.
It's been unreal. And look, it's the old adage. Yes, you can have a great first line, a great second line. It's the depth guys. It's the guys on the third. It's the guys on the fourth. It's that third set of defensemen. It's the PK. It's the blocking of the shots. That's what wins you championships. And for the depth to be so good for both these clubs, this series, Vic, it could be one of two things. Each game could be close, could be 2-1, 3-2, or to your point about, hey, does Edmonton find a way to get around the Panthers' forecheck, and did they put up 5-6 on Bobrovsky? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It could go that way as well.
It's the goaltending matchup is, of course, something that's going to be discussed over and over and over again, because we've seen brilliance from Skinner, and then we've seen quite the opposite of you, as you just mentioned. Yeah. I think one of the storylines we haven't been paying enough attention to this offseason is how good Sergei Bobrovsky has been. Ryan, 211 goals against average.
No, I know.
17 games. We're not talking about a small sample size here. He has played every single game for the Florida Panthers, and he has a 211 goals against average. Are we going to credit some of the players in front of him? Of course we are. It's not a one-man show. But he's also done his part, and he's made the big saves when he's been required to make the big saves. So we're going to look at him as the steady Freddy, so to speak, in this matchup. And then we're going to look at the other side, the other end of the ice, at Stuart Skinner, and wonder which version of him is coming to play today. Is it going to be the 33 for 33 shutout guy, or is it going to be the guy who lets in three in the first period and then goes south after that? So that to me is also a storyline to watch.
And this is where the kind of the mental strength comes to play a lot more so in this series than the other ones for goalies. We talked about this, you and I, at length a number of times over the years. Goalies are a different breed. I do not want to get inside any of their minds. You just don't get it. But Skinner, what he has been certainly known for is he lets in a bad goal or maybe two, and then that's it. Bobrovsky, he's been there before. The numbers are better. He lets in one or two. It's okay. He kind of has the mental edge. So I don't know. Again, these two teams are very tight. Injuries, though, you wanted to mention injuries quickly, kind of some updates.
Well,
with,
I think this has been one of the wonderful parts. I know a lot of people are annoyed about the break in between the series because it's been several days. We're still not. I mean, we should mention it.
I am.
I'm not. I'm actually not, Ryan. And I get why people are, because they want to watch hockey. All right. But right now it is Monday, June the 2nd. We should probably mention that. So we're still about 48 hours away ish, a little more than that, from game one. And it's already been a while. What I do like about this break is the fact that skaters have been able to heal. So if you've been banged up, and so Luostarinen is playing for the Florida Panthers. He was a question mark. Connor Brown's going to be back for the Edmonton Oilers. This sounds like, anyways, none of this is confirmed, but it sounds like Connor Brown is going to be back in the lineup, which is a nice plus, especially now that the Oilers know that they're going to be without Zach Hyman. Zach Hyman is the only main performer who will be sitting out this season as of right now. That's not too bad. When you get to the end, Ryan, to the finishing line here, and it's the final, and you only have one main player, one major performer who's sitting out, that's not bad. The Oilers would love to have Zach Hyman. I think it's a huge loss. But to have Ekholm back too, and he played great when he in his return. So the fact that the two sides are healthy or healthy-ish.
Yeah, careful. That laundry list is going to be like this at the end of the series.
We're going to find out, first of all, and they haven't even played each other yet. So, I mean, if this goes seven, everybody's going to have a nice long lay down afterwards. But at least the skaters are going to be out there, and we're going to see best on best as much as possible.
The only questionable player for the Panthers is A.J. Greer, and that's questionable. But you make a great point. For the most part, again, they can be hiding injuries. Everyone is healthy, which is going to be great for both these two teams. Okay, predictions. You asked me before we came on. I said, hold on a second. I haven't pressed the record button yet. Be patient. So I'm going to make you be patient even more, if that's okay. Who do you have? How many games? Give me the Conn Smythe.
I'm not going to break with spring Matty Ash tradition now. I've picked the Oilers to lose the first round. I picked the Oilers to lose the second round. I picked the Oilers to lose the third round. I'm going to do a big por favor to all Edmonton fans out there. And I am picking the Panthers in seven.
Conn Smythe then.
Alexander Barkov.
Barkov. Okay.
The Panthers win in seven, that means that Alexander Barkov has done his job.
Someone came on X, right, the other day and basically not chirped us, but we're basically saying,
he totally chirped us, which is totally fine.
So I wrote back as well. I'm like, I'm like, well, if it's worked for three rounds, I'll do it again. I'm going to have the Panthers in six.
Wow. Okay.
They're going to win it on the road. And Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be
he would be a consideration for me as well. The only other Panther I was considering was Sam Bennett too, because Sam Bennett, and if he if he creates enough mayhem, he's going to put himself in that conversation as well. This one is a coin flip to me. Like Paul Maurice said the other day, both teams are better.
Yeah.
Right? The Oilers are more mature. Their defense is much stauncher. And generally they're playing better. And the Panthers have Seth Jones and Brad Marchand, who they didn't have last year. Seth Jones is playing 26 minutes a game, Ryan.
No, it's crazy. Yeah.
All right. So this is a big factor. That's the only reason I'm leaning Panthers, not just to be silly to appease Oilers fans by going against their team. I do genuinely believe that the Panthers are going to pull it off. But I'm telling you, this goes down to the wire for me.
Two teams playing very well, and we'll see game one starting on Wednesday. So 1-2 in Edmonton, and then 3-4 in Florida. And then after that, who knows? I firmly believe this thing is going to go past four games. But I'm just saying, the only guarantees now are the first four, at least going into game one. Okay. Big story out of that Western Conference Final Series.
Why? What happened?
Well, hold on. Dallas lost.
It's the weirdest thing.
Edmonton moved on. Oh, no, that's not the big story.
No.
It was what happened with the head coach and their number one goaltender. Down 2-0 in the elimination game. Pete DeBoer calls a timeout again. For people that don't know, of course, if you live under a rock, you don't know about this. Called the timeout, rallied the troops. Jake Gottinger starting to go back to his net. Oh, no. Come here, Jake. Casey DeSmith comes in.
Ice cold Casey DeSmith goes in.
Everyone talked about that after. Where do you stand on how that whole thing transpired and unfolded?
At the time, I was really confused. I didn't quite understand what was going on.
Me too.
But then I thought, okay, he's pulling him because he let in two goals on two shots. But even they were two pretty good goals, and he's sending a message. DeBoer is sending a message to the team. I get that. It's an elimination game for the Stars. They've got to pull out all the stops. Fine. I fully expected to see Ottinger back in the crease at the start of the second period.
Yeah,
that's what I was expecting, especially since Casey DeSmith let one in pretty much immediately to Jeff Skinner when he was when he took over. You can't blame the guy. He hasn't played since April.
No, not at all.
But then beyond that, but then Jason Dickinson gets them back in the game. So now it's 3-1. Now we got ourselves a hockey game here, and it really matters for the Stars. So why would you not, at the start of the second period, you bring out your guy who you've relied on the entire time? It would have been a great rallying cry for the team. It would have been a great rallying cry for the fans, because this is at American Airlines Center. And that's the part that confuses me. Not the pulling necessarily, but everything that's happened since then. Yeah. And then even after the game, the way that DeBoer addressed it,
exactly the same. The thing that caught me the most is when you saw the replay of there was the camera behind the Dallas net, or maybe in the corner of that end, and it caught toward the tail end of the timeout when Ottinger was coming back to the net, and then it caught him do a quick pirouette and realize, oh, I'm being called back. So then he went. And what I saw was, if you watch it on the screen, you look at the top left of the screen in that shot, you see the Dallas players that were going on the ice for that first shift after the timeout. They looked back, and then they looked at each other. And it was one of those things to me thinking, is he actually getting pulled?
What's going on here?
Right. So that to me was the big one. And then you're right. Pete DeBoer saying afterward about, look what happened. He can't make a save. He can't win a game. He can't this in the Western Conference Final. I give Jake Ottinger a ton of credit when he came out and said, I got to learn from this. I got to be better. I got to make those saves.
He said what he needed to say.
Exactly. He said what, he said what he needed to do and needed to say. But it was one of those things. To me, even if they put him back in, when it was 2-0, they weren't winning that hockey game. That's what I thought anyway. Even if Ottinger did come, I just think Edmonton had it already done. Mm-hmm. They had it already
done.
But something, I would not have handled it that way. If you go up, with somebody, you go down with somebody. You keep him in, you keep fighting, he's your guy. Didn't work. Dallas, again, Carolina can't win the Eastern Conference. Dallas can't win a Western Conference final.
Those two, though, still, Ottinger and DeBoer, they're going to have a couple of pops sometime this summer.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
And they will. You know, once everything, the dust settles and everything cools down a little bit and the temperature comes down, those two can sit by a pool, have a margarita, and hash this out. They've got June, July, and August to do it, because Ottinger has signed 8-year extension starting next year.
Yeah, it starts next year.
He's not going anywhere. Unless there's a blockbuster trade, he's not going anywhere. And Pete DeBoer is one of the most respected coaches in the league that any team would love to have behind their own bench. So those two are going to have to figure it out. But yes, to your point, it's interesting. The Stars just always seem to get right there. I've been asked a couple of times, what do they need? I don't think they need anything.
I don't think so either.
I just think they need to figure out how to win.
Exactly. They need to get past that point. Now, give credit to Edmonton. They played well, but boy, Dallas' offense, they just... It was non-existent with anybody.
I'm interested in the injury report coming out from that team, because Jamie Benn does not look like Jamie Benn at all. I think we're going to hear a bunch of different notes about a bunch of different players. Yeah. But again, you got to play through that stuff.
You do. Not the Stars' shiniest of moments.
Not very sparkly at all there, Ryan.
There you go. You see, that was way better than mine. Okay, a few more things, then we'll get to Emily Kaplan, ESPN. She'll join us in a bit, and we'll go back into the rematch between Edmonton and Florida.
She'll have a lot to say. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Oh, she will. This is, known as the silly season. I still think that's a silly way to describe
moniker,
it.
Moniker?
Anyway,
sure.
I'll go with it. A lot of UFAs, RFA, a whole bunch of different things and signings that will happen. That'll all be done by September, then things will get going in October. Jonathan Toews, I know that you're pulling for him. I'm pulling for him. I hope everybody is. He's been out for a little bit of time. Took time away for health issues.
Like 5 years.
His agent, told his agent, hey, send the note out, send the memo. I'm ready to go. I want to come back. I think this guy would be a great fit on any team, especially a contending team. If you find a way to give him a 1-year contract with a not a huge salary, bit of a base one, not the base in the NHL, which is 9+, but more. But then give him an incentive-laden contract as well. Give him a one-year deal. I think he can still get things done.
We're going to see how he can move first, because five years is a very long time. And he dealt with long-term COVID for a good part of it, had a lot of other immuno issues. So this is not small potato stuff, right? It's not like he broke his leg and he took a couple years off and then something happened and he was rehabilitated himself. He's 37 years old, Ryan.
Yeah.
37. And I know there was that epic trip to India where he figured out how to take better care of himself and got to a better place mentally as well, which is such a huge part of it. So we're going to see what he looks like. I do think that an NHL team takes a shot, because why not? He knows how to win a Stanley Cup. One of the best players of his generation at his prime. 37 isn't 47. Toss him a million bucks. See what he can do. If it flames out, it flames out. But you could do, if he is at 85%, of Jonathan Toews, he would be welcome as a third line center, if not a fourth line center, on pretty much any team in the league.
No, I agree. So he played 53 games in 22-23. So he's been out 23-24, now 24-25. Again, yeah, we'll see what he does.
But how many did he play that year?
53.
Okay.
So it's you know, he's been out not a huge, huge amount of time, but 2 years is a long time in hockey. Anyway, Jonathan, we're pulling for you. We really are. you want to mention this Yarmer Yager?
Okay, we should give credit to the the content creators, though, because they deserve it. Okay. Who were hockey coverage on Instagram points out that Yarmer Yager has had a former teammate reach the Stanley Cup final for 45 straight seasons. So the first was Brian Trottier, who did it in 1980. Who I completely forgot was a Pittsburgh Penguin later in his, because he's just an Islander to me, right? Okay. So he was the first, and so he was several years. And then this year, it's Alexander Barkov, who also played with Yarmer Yager. I can't think of another player that might apply to. Maybe if you did a big dig, there would be other players out there. Actually, you know what?
Yeah.
Probably there are. But the fact that Yager moved around so much at the end of his career, he was in Pittsburgh forever until he wasn't, right? And then he moved around a bunch of places. So he's going to play with a bunch of different players. So I just think it's a fun stat. That's all.
It's a neat stat. And the fact Yager is still playing and it's unreal. It's unreal to fathom. I mean, how old is he now? He's 50-something.
Oh, geez. I think so.
Right? Mm-hmm. He's got to be 50-something. Anyway, that's a crazy stat.
He is. Yeah. He's born in 72.
Okay, so
53. Right, and he's still playing.
No, Yager. I love it.
Drop dead on the ice, and that's exactly what he wants.
Right. Yeah, there's a way to go for him.
And
that's the way to go. We don't want it to happen, though.
No, not for 40 years, but still.
Yeah, if it's a way to go.
That would be his desired exit, is my guess.
Congrats to the London Knights. Mm-hmm. The Medicine Hat 4-1 on Sunday. And that is their, third Memorial Cup in the last 20 years. So congrats to them on that one.
It was a boring game. It was a great tournament. But the final was really boring. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to fault the London Knights. Congratulations also to Medicine Hat. They were perfect in the round robin and then just couldn't close the deal. They actually beat the London Knights in the round robin and then couldn't close the deal in the final. But again, an excellent tournament. That is such a great hockey team. Some really good players are coming out of there. And Sam Dickinson with the San Jose Sharks. Oh, my goodness. They are getting a good one. That guy's a beast.
Yeah, the Leafs got to get Easton Cowan from a shot next year.
I really agree with you.
If you're talking about this whole DNA thing, tree living, get some really young DNA in that team.
I think he's ready.
Yeah, I do too. He's got the attitude. He's got the attitude for it for sure, right? So anyway, congrats to the London Knights. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Emily Kaplan, ESPN, will join us. We will go 77 seconds with Emily, but also get her thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final rematch, Edmonton, Florida Game 1 coming up on Wednesday. Emily is next.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Madiash.
Okay, as I said off the top of the show, it went from 16 down to 2, and guess what? It's exactly the way it was. Well, kind of. Things are a bit different. It's a different year, but it's the same two teams. Who's going to hoist Lord Stanley's mug? We'll find out starting game one on Wednesday between Florida and Edmonton. ESPN hockey reporter Emily Kaplan joining us here on the program. Last time we had you on, you were a little bit under the weather. It's been a long time, so you haven't been sick this whole time.
No. I probably have been sick like 2 to 3 times between them, though. It's the nature of my job in and out of ice rinks, especially in the summer and a lot of travel. But feeling good, ready to get to Edmonton for this awesome Stanley Cup final, and excited to chat with you guys.
Thanks a lot, Emily. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, I was just going to say, we said off the top of the show, too, that to me, sometimes you get to the Stanley Cup final and you think, okay, is the Eastern Conference representative the best team? Is the Western one the best team? And I do feel that after especially these three rounds in each conference, I feel that these two are the best teams.
I could not agree more. You know, I cover mostly the Eastern Conference by nature of my job. Let's be honest, we all have an East Coast bias, and that's most of our national games. Yeah, and right. So I've covered the Panthers a ton this season and in the beginning of the playoffs. And I always like wonder about my biases, right? Like I'm just around them. And they just emerged as absolutely the best team in the East, no question about it. And then when I jumped over to cover the Western Conference final, I was like, holy cow, I feel like the West, the level of hockey was just different. I think it was a much more difficult conference to navigate. You know, I kind of jumped in for game 7 of Colorado, Dallas. I was blown away by the intensity, by the pace of that game.
Right.
And then just looking at the way that the Oilers emerged past the Stars, who I thought were an excellent team, dominant. And so my recency bias tells me that Edmonton is the best team in the world right now, mostly over the last 2 weeks. But I know how good Florida is. And I think we as hockey fans are just treated to the best of the best. And so many times when we get to the Stanley Cup finals, it's like a war of attrition, right? Like there's so many injuries. And the fact that both of these teams are, knock on wood, mostly healthy heading into this final.
We were talking about
this
that.
Year. Yeah, it feels like we're just like injecting energy as we go along into these playoffs with guys, you know, entering the mix. Again, we're really lucky, and I think it's going to be a great series.
I mean, your recency bias aside is backed up by the fact that the Oilers are 12-2 in their last 14 games.
So, thanks for bringing the stats, Victoria.
Numerically, but you are backed up 100%, right? I mean, they have been almost unbeatable since then. At least Florida had a little bit of a time with Toronto, but other than that, they made quick work of Carolina. They made quick enough work earlier in of the Lightning, who played harder, but still, I mean, it was 5 games. It wasn't that tough either. Do you feel that this Stanley Cup final is a little bit more special than it would be otherwise because we are being treated to a rematch? Is there that little extra there for you? Because it is for me.
And that, yes, I do agree. And not just any rematch. Like last year was effing epic, right?
Yeah, it was.
You have almost a reverse sweep. Connor McDavid doing everything he can to will his team to their first Stanley Cup. Yeah. And I think the other aspect of it that makes it more special is both of these teams returned, and I think they're even better than last season.
Yes.
And I think both coaches would admit it. Players on both teams would admit it. You know, again, the level of hockey last year was great. And usually when a team gets that far, okay, then it comes to July 1st and they have to lose a bunch of free agencies by product of the salary cap. And I was like, wait a minute. Like they're so deep. And I look at the Oilers, for example, they were able to like insert Victor Arvidsson, and kind of like a multiple 30 goal scorer in this league, just like late in the series. And then all of a sudden he looked fantastic. I'm like, what's this guy been doing on the bench?
Right.
Jeff Skinner, a guy that scored nearly 400 goals, like also didn't get into the last game of last series. And then the Panthers, I know Paul Maurice will go on and on about their depth. And I really love the way that so many of their new additions have just fit in seamlessly. So I think that is the aspect of this that I'm most, thrilled for, is that it's the highest level of hockey, and it's even an elevated step from last season.
Seth Jones is playing 26 minutes a game, and he looks pretty good. And he wasn't on this team last year. He wasn't on this team 4 months ago. It's incredible.
And neither was Brad Marchand. Like
I know, not even mentioning him.
Talk about recency bias. Like this is the longtime captain of an original six team, and then all of a sudden we're like, he's holding court with the media every day. It feels like he's been in Florida forever. Like it's just wild.
There's so many storylines going in. The depth you talked about is extraordinary in both of these teams. There's the goaltending story as well. Certainly Bobrovsky has the edge. I joked with Vic. I'm like, Stuart Skinner can either post a shutout or he has an .800 save percentage. There's nothing really in between with him. So I do think the edge is in goal, certainly for Florida, based on experience as well. What are some of the other storylines kind of you're looking at here that will play out, and how do you think they will play out?
Well, I still think Stuart Skinner is a story that we're all going to be talking about. That streak was insane. None of us had ever seen anything like it. But at the end of the Stars series, I mean, he was letting in some goals, but also putting up a ton of quality saves and did finally have a couple games where he was in the 900s, which you love to see and you need to see. And so I think just his mental fortitude of how he's so vulnerable and so open about the roller coasters that he rides mentally. And obviously he's on the high right now and he's confident, the team's confident in him, but like, can he stay at that level, especially when he faces adversity, because he's going to against the Florida Panthers. So that's surely a story that I'm going to be watching. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, just the way that they seem to gear up when the stakes are even higher. You know, you're going to see them part on lines, you know, especially with Zach Hyman. And that is the one major injury, right?
Yes.
Corey Perry looked really good on that top line with Connor McDavid. McDavid told me he's one of the smartest players he's ever played with. But I love the situations where Chris Knobloch and his adjustments, and he throws Leon on there, you know, in a shift after a penalty kill or shifts at the end of the game. And so just watching those two work together, I think, is something that is an absolute treat. And then from the Florida perspective, I think it's their depth. I just can't remember a team where you just see contributions up and down the lineup. And all of a sudden you look at the stat sheet and it's like everyone, like we got to the final of, you know, the last series, the Eastern Conference final. Like one of the only guys that hadn't scored was Evan Rodriguez.
Right.
Been scoring in the Stanley Cup final run. And it's just, it's insane to me. So I think those are a couple of storylines that I'm really interested in. But, you know, obviously special teams and goaltendings is usually what decides these type of series.
Yeah.
What do the Panthers need to do to win this?
They need to find a way to neutralize Connor McDavid. And I think you know that he's going to put up production, but you can't get into situations where he absolutely takes over games. And unfortunately for the Stars, I feel like they saw way too many bursts of that, where it's just like he's winning foot races, he's bursting by guys, he's buzzing at a different gear. So I think if they can find a way, and I think Paul Maurice is so good, specifically when they get back down to Sunrise, of getting those matchups, because he's got great checking lines. That third line with the two Finns and Brad Marchand, like they're pesky as hell. Or you just stick Barkov on him the entire time. So I think just neutralizing Connor McDavid in some way so that he's not putting up 4 or 5 point nights and just terrorizing you.
It just sounds so simple. You just say it out loud. Yeah, you know, you just got to contain Connor McDavid. Yeah. That's all.
It's the same thing with Alex Ovechkin. Just like, just get him in his office. Just put somebody there. Why can't you stop him from scoring from that one spot?
It's so true. So annoying for the opposition. What about Edmonton? One of the big strengths of Florida is that neutral zone. They're on you time and time again. You mentioned Connor and trying to get through everybody. What are some of the things Edmonton really needs to focus on to try to get the win here?
You know, I think it's not getting frustrated by that Florida forecheck. Like, it is this system that they play in. I love the way that Bill Zito explains it, their general manager. He says it's physically and mentally exhausting for the guys. Because as you can see, they wear down teams. They're so fit, that team. Like, I think they put so much money and intention in getting in great shape and rest and recovery, that when they get down there and they're forechecking you, like, it's annoying as heck. And so sometimes it's just like, you know, a little flip pass. It's just, you know, just getting it out, you know, and dealing with that pressure with some composure, which I think this team can do. And, you know, one of the things covering the Oilers the last round that Connor brought up so many times, and I know Leon did as well, is like, they don't ride the highs and they don't dwell in the lows as much. Like, they're just a much calmer team than they are last year. And I think that, you know, when I hear that, I'm like, okay, if they lose a game, they're more calm. But I also think in specific situations. And so if they can handle Florida's forecheck with a bit of composure, a bit of that calmness, I think that's going to be clutch.
I agree.
If you, okay, so not Connor McDavid, not Sacha Barkov, not Leon Draisaitl, who's one X factor for you from either team that could be a big difference maker?
So for Edmonton, I mean, again, recency bias, but I just saw the way that Corey Perry just, you know, I'm sure he's so sick of the qualifier that you need to mention he's 40 years old every time you talk about him.
I like it.
I know, exactly. And something that he should take immense pride in, right? Like that he's still so productive at this level. But, you know, we know the fact that how many Stanley Cup finals he's in a row and looking for his first cup. But did he win with Anaheim?
Yes.
Yeah, it's been so long.
No, I know, because he's 40s. He won the Hart years
ago.
Yeah, that seems like another generation of hockey when you think about it. He's just been around
But, you know, the way that, you know, I know him and Zach Hyman flip sometimes for that net front presence on the power play, but like, it doesn't feel like they've missed Zach Hyman at all, because of how good he is. You know, he's gotten some clutch goals in the power play and then stepping in on Connor McDavid's wing. So he would be a guy. And also just, you know, the way that he can kind of get under guys' skin.
So that annoying.
Said, if anyone is, annoying, it's the entire Florida Panthers team, right? Like, they are masters of the dark art of just kind of, you know, chipping away, chipping away.
Oh, yeah.
And then I know it's not one player, but I would just say that third line for Florida, the two Finns, Lostarinen, we're kind of monitoring his health. Paul Maurice says he's going to be healthy, but he's just so good. He's just so underrated. The way that Brad Marchand plays with them. I think those guys, if they can score, you know, I think Paul Maurice says like he's looking for those guys to score one goal a series. If they can score two goals in the series, I think that puts Florida in a really solid position.
Awesome. I think at the back to Perry, I think at the end of each season when the season's done, I think Corey Perry instructs his agent to send the teams a memo saying, look, I want to keep playing. And at the bottom of the memo, it says, I will guarantee you a place in the Stanley Cup final. And, oh, okay, let's sign him. We'll give you whatever. We're going to, because it's unreal. It's unreal what this guy continues to do. I love watching him play.
I think he does mitigate the loss of Zach Hyman quite a bit. I think the loss of Zach Hyman would be much, much larger if they didn't have Corey Perry. So I think that's, I still think it's going to be big. I mean, he had 33 hits in four games against the Dallas Stars. That's a lot, but we'll see how they manage without him. You want to, let's move, we'll move on from the series now, Ryan. And
Let's do, something happened after the score was 2-0 Edmonton in that final game against Dallas. I can't remember exactly what happened to the goalie. Jake Onger pulled. Your thoughts on how that all went down?
I was shocked. I mean, I was shocked to see him pulled, but I get it from that position, right? Like, you need to get a wake-up call to your team. It's not about Jake Onger. It's about the other guys. But then I was really shocked that he didn't go out there for the second period.
There you go. Preaching to the choir. I mean, honestly.
With due respect to Casey Smith, like, this is your franchise guy. Like, okay, give him the breather, get him a mental reset, and then get him back out there. And then the way that Pete DeBoer handled it, both after the game and then in the comments on locker cleanout day, I just found unsavory. I really did. And I think we saw moments in that series where Pete DeBoer gets really stressed and sometimes gets overwhelmed by the moment. But when you're in a post-game press conference, you usually have a little bit of time to digest. And the way that he threw Jake under the bus, I thought was pretty uncool. And then doing it again 48 hours later and having the audacity to say, I haven't had the opportunity to talk to Jake yet.
I haven't talked to him yet.
Come on.
And then how classy Jake Ottinger was. And I honestly am so impressed by Jake at his age, the maturity level he has. And, you know, he took accountability. He's going to use this as motivation to continue to try to be the best goalie in the world. And I just said, you know, that's a kid that no matter what situation he is, he's going to find a way to be successful. So I think this is a really difficult position for the GM, Jim Nill, because the owner, you know, did an interview with Tim Kalishaw, my great former colleague of the Around the Horn, and basically he's like, well, who are we going to find better than Pete? And he's not wrong, right? Like, you see the retreads and some of the names, and, you know, it's like at this stage, specifically in the hiring cycle, like, okay, if you're going to get rid of him, like, who's the name that's coming in that's better? And I'm not sure somebody's out there.
Yeah.
At the same time, I really would love to talk to guys in that locker room of how they really feel, because I know they adore Jake, and I wonder if that's harm that can't be reversed. And, you know, I think this will blow over. I think they'll find a way to coexist next season. Like, Jake Ottinger's not asking for a trade. Like, he just signed a long-term deal there. He loves it. A really talented team that's not going anywhere. But this is a lot uglier than it needed to be.
Fortunately, they have 3 months. It's not like we're starting back up in 3 or 4 weeks and they would have to mend the fences super quickly. At least they do have some time to, we were saying earlier, have a margarita by the pool in a month from now, when everything's settled down a little bit and, you know, cooler heads prevail and everybody can
digest it. Pete has to buy Jake.
Yeah, I think the rounds are on Pete.
That's step one.
After, well, you know what? Jim Nill, he's constantly being heralded as one of the best GMs in the league. So he's going to possibly prove that in the next couple of months or so.
Totally. And if you ever had an opportunity to talk to Jim Nill, not only is he like one of the nicest men, if not the nicest men in the game, he just has such a way with people. Like, you'll sit down with him, he'll remember a fact about you, he's curious about your family, and that's the way that he's always treated people within his organization. I mean, I look at Petrovic, right? Like, that's a guy that was in the minor league all season long, was mentoring Bischel, and then when they called him up, they're like, well, we're going to repay you for all that you've done and the role you've played, and we're going to make sure that your family has an Airbnb. We'll pay for it as you're here in the Stanley Cup final. So all that is to say that, like, I think Jim Nill has a really nice human touch, a personal touch, and I wouldn't be surprised if the onus is on him to have to mediate this.
Okay.
I agree. This is, again, the Stanley Cup Final starts Wednesday, but there's a lot of off-ice news that have been going on. Just want your thoughts on Jonathan Toews. Vic and I certainly, I'm sure you are as well, pulling for this guy. We'd love to see him back. Who knows exactly what he's gone through in the last couple of seasons that he's been out due to health issues, various ones, but just your take on him. And again, him saying to his agent, I'm open for business, essentially.
Yeah, I think it's a remarkable comeback story. We love comeback stories.
We sure do.
Right? And I think for him, the way it ended in Chicago was so unsavory because not only the position the team was in, right? Like you're there, you're in the dynasty, everything's going your way. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, sorry. Like we're completely switching directions and we've got to rebuild and you're no longer part of our plan. Sorry. And at the same time, he was going through personal health issues where I know at least the last season that he showed up for training camp, he wasn't in the best shape and probably didn't feel the best about, you know, what he was able to put on the ice, especially as a captain when you want to set by example. So the fact that he was able to take some time away and now that he's very serious about training, I think is super cool. Getting to rewrite your own ending. Everyone wants to go out on their own terms.
Yep.
All that said, I want to know what he looks like out there,
me
right?
Too.
Like, competitive hockey in a very long time. And, you know, you can get into skating shape and physical shape, but hockey shape is very, very different. So I think there will be no shortage of suitors. I'd love to see him go to a contender. I know all eyes are probably on Winnipeg. I think there's a lot of other like sneaky teams out there. Anaheim, I know, has been trying to get a big splash for a while. Maybe that's a nice soft landing spot. But what role does he have? Like for me, he's an ideal third line center. Does he, you know, have pride in himself that he wants to be on the second line? Can he switch to wing? You know, he's so smart. So I just have so many question marks. And I think it's a really exciting storyline that we'll be following all through next year.
I'm pulling for Winnipeg just because he's a Manitoba boy. I like the story.
Yeah.
Just the whole full circle come back home thing. And one more. And before we just move on to 77 seconds, which you're familiar with because you've already run that
gamut.
That's why she's back. That's the only reason why she's back on this.
Well, I thought it was 88 seconds, and now I'm feeling really good that it's down to 77. I'm sorry.
What is this postseason? I mean, you've been super busy watching all of it. What's the biggest surprise for you this postseason? Something that happened then maybe you didn't anticipate?
I mean, I go back to that game 7 of the first round with Colorado versus Dallas. And I just, what we love about hockey so much is it's the ultimate team sport, right? And outside of Connor McDavid, who I just said is the guy that can take over a game, there's really few players that can or do, right? You're so dependent on your teammates. The star player is typically playing a third of the game. And so that heater that Mikko Rantanen went on, not only to eliminate his team, and then it continued in game one of the next series.
Yeah.
I think that just stunned me. It, you know, got attention of those outside of our little small community in hockey.
Right.
And I think it was just a spectacular moment, a really human moment because of the motivation of, you know, everything that he had been through this year, getting traded against his will, you know, and having to recalibrate his entire future, his entire living situation. And then to, you know, put a stamp like that in a game 7 in a third period. It was just stunning and remarkable.
I thought it was a big F you and I really appreciated it. It was,
it
just wrapped up a little, you know, a bow on the season. Okay, guys. Yeah. Anyways, I love that storyline as well.
Down to 2. Again, game 1 starting up on Wednesday. Before we let Emily go, let's go 77 seconds in with you. I was actually thinking about a way to not introduce you, but bring you into the segment. So here we go. Erik Karlsson is number 65. So EK 65. This is EK 77.
Oh, Emily, we like it.
77 seconds.
I'm like, Mikola. Like, we got some good 77s out there these days.
Right? Let's go. None better than Emily Kaplan. Here we go.
I'm like,
ready?
Where is he going with this?
I know. You never know, but I always end up in the right place. Well, not really. who wins the cup?
You know, Oilers. I said Oilers in 7. And when you pick a series in 7, it's just the admission that it's a coin flip and you want to give respect to both teams. I just feel like there's something carrying them this year. The motivation of having, you know, just come that close last year. And I think Connor gets his first cup.
So this is a layup now. If the Oilers win the cup, who wins the Conn Smythe?
Yeah, I think there's no other question. It's David Sorgas.
unless he goes out in game 1 and Leon Draisaitl scores 10 goals, I suppose. But I mean...
Totally.
I don't know how it happens any other way.
Sure, he's got some production. Other guys have production, but I mean, this is his team. Everybody knows
he's just different.
There's no one like him. Where is Mitch Marner playing next year?
My pet theory is Columbus.
Really?
Columbus.
I haven't heard that one. Why?
I think staying on the East Coast would be important to him and his family. Yep. I think, you know, he's very family oriented, having his first kid.
Yep.
I think they're ready to make a step with all their young players. And if ownership is committed to, you know, putting out a contract like that, I think he'd be so fun to watch there. Like him and Kent Johnson and all their young guys would be really, really super fun. And it's just quieter, right? Like, I think that's probably something he craves after the Toronto media market.
Whatever do you mean?
Let's move on.
It's so sane here. People aren't crazy at all. Is McDavid an Oiler after next year?
100%.
There's no doubt in your mind.
You know, and I think if Leon didn't resign, I would feel a lot less sure. But I just feel like they've made a commitment to each other. They've made a commitment to the city. It's not 100%, but I feel pretty strongly. And I know like the Rangers and other teams are going to come and say, like, look how glitzy and amazing it can be. Mm-hmm. But I think for him and his legacy, I can't imagine a world where he's not in Edmonton right now.
Let's keep it at 97% then.
All right. That was quite clever.
All right. Most interesting interview this year for you, Emily.
Or one of them anyway.
Or one that you may remember a bit more than others.
You know, Stuart Skinner, I really enjoyed talking to him. I had a great interview with him during the Western Conference Final. And I just, again, appreciate how open he is about everything he goes through mentally, because we're always wondering what's it like back there. And the fact that he just speaks about the highs and the lows and how he rides the wave, I just find it very endearing.
I like that. Favorite NHL city to visit?
On the job.
What was that?
When you're working on the job.
On and off the job. I think Montreal, the fact that we were there at the Four Nations, that was the highlight of my season. That Saturday night at the Bell Center, USA versus Canada. I feel so deprived. And every time I say this, like, it's first world pain. I am so grateful in this job. I get to so many places. But we covered a lot of that first round series, Washington versus Montreal. Mm-hmm. We had all the games in D.C., zero in Montreal.
Oh,
and the guys on the Capitals were telling me, like, that was the best environment they had ever played in. It was just so cool, just so electric. You know, as you know, it's just, it's the best. So Montreal would be number one.
I was in the Bell Center for the Canada-Sweden game to open, but it was incredible. And I instantly regretted not just biting it and getting tickets for the US-Canada and just extending the stay for a couple of days. I'm still kind of kicking myself a little bit over that, but that's fine. One fun thing we should know about Ray Ferraro.
He gets to the airport entirely too early. His anxiety about missing flights gives me anxiety. I am the girl that likes to show up in security right as boarding is beginning. I will admit that's not everybody's appetite of risk, but I just love giving him shit for just how nervy he gets in the morning about getting there. And then we'd sit there and I'm like, right, you just want to sit and have a yogurt and talk to me for an hour? Like, why are we here?
Have you ever been burned by showing up that late? Have you ever missed?
Knock on wood, never missed a flight on this job.
Okay.
Sure. But when it comes to work, I make it. Even getting to Pearson during these playoffs. Showing up and them just being like, oh, yeah, no, customs is closed. Nobody knows why. And I even gave myself too much time that morning and it was just razor thin, but we got through.
I like the fact there's a parallel here. Ray Ferraro is very much Ryan Payton and you, and you and I.
100%. Oh, yeah.
I'll fly with you any day of the week.
Ryan and I have traveled together, but we've never been on the same flight. And maybe that might be a blessing in disguise, just that we've never had to. He's 3 hours ahead of time. I'm racing for the gate.
That's hilarious. AJ Molesko's in our boat. I know that. So I don't want to say there's like a gender divide, but maybe we just have a slight risk.
Sounds like it.
All right.
Last one. Next global destination.
Yeah, your next trip after you wrap all this up.
Yeah. My next trip. My boyfriend and I are planning a trip to Asia this summer.
Fantastic.
Yes. Where? So we're looking forward to it. Starting in Japan and probably Vietnam and Philippines.
Amazing.
And in Seoul. So I'm really excited.
I spent 6 weeks in Vietnam years ago.
Let's talk offline.
I will tell you what to where to avoid, perhaps.
Okay. At least Singapore knows where to go. But
There's a couple of drinking cruise ships you don't want to be on, and there's some that you do want to be on.
Okay.
We will discuss that later. I want one bonus one here. Then let's circle back to hockey. Do the Oilers have to win this?
No.
Okay.
I think that, you know, if Connor's knocking on the doorstep again and again, and I also just think about this team is like, they're built to be good for a very long time, right? Yeah. Like, they now have young players that have filled in the mid early 20s that will help them, you know, and can make up for the fact that they don't have necessarily the best prospect pool. You know, I'm looking at like an Evan Bouchard, Jake mm-hmm. Wallman. You know, I talked to Jake Wallman during the last series. I'm like, are you open to resign? He's like, I want to be anywhere that wants me. And they wanted him bad. And I just, I feel like now he's a lifelong Oiler. And so I just think there's enough good head pulls in another great young mm-hmm. player that they just kind of insert into the lineup and look seamless. So I think they will be good for a very long time, but what a better opportunity than now to win your first.
Absolutely.
No, exactly. Game one Wednesday. Emily, I know you got to travel today. Safe travels. Thanks for this. And we'll look forward to doing this again.
My pleasure. Thank you guys.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.